It's time for From the Short Grass with Trey Shapp, a golf podcast for those who love golf, struggle with golf, and just like to enjoy the outdoors and fellowship with friends, all while chasing a ball around trying to put it in a 4 1/4 inch diameter hole. From the Short Grass is brought to you by Stevens Incorporated, an independent financial services firm with the freedom to focus on what matters most. And by Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels. We partner with you to deliver high-yield results by managing, developing, and investing in top-quality hospitality assets. And now, from the Short Grass, here is your host, Trey Shapp.
It's hard to put into words how special this is. It's been a long week, a grind of a week. The golf course was so challenging, and to be sitting here wearing this jacket again and getting to take it home is extremely special. If I would have played a little bit defensively, it would have been a significantly different finish. You know, I went for the green and 2 on 13, was able to make birdie. I attacked the pin on 14, was able to make birdie. Went for it again on 15, was able to make a nice par, and hit a really good shot there into 16 to make birdie. And so, you know, if I was just trying to play for pars the whole back nine, I would have been standing there on 18 having to make par. And hoping Ludwig would only make a par. And so around this golf course, you have to stay aggressive. You have to hit the right shots. There's no way around it out here. You can't play too defensive and you can't play too aggressive. You just got to hit the right shots. And fortunately, today I was able to do that. I will go home soaking this victory tonight. We'll definitely enjoy the birth of my first child. But with that being said, you know, I still love competing. My priorities will change here very soon. You know, my son or daughter will now be the main priority along with my wife. So golf will now be, you know, probably fourth in line. But I still love competing. I don't plan on taking my off the ball anytime soon, that's for sure.
Welcome to another edition of From the Short Grass. I am your host, Trey Shapp. That was the voice of Scottie Scheffler, the 2024 Masters champion. He slips on the green jacket for the second time in his career with rounds of 66, 72, 71, and 68 on Sunday, where he birdied 6 of his final 11 holes to shoot 4 under par 68. He finished at minus 11, 4 shots ahead of runner-up Ludvig Åberg, who fired a round of 69 in his final 18 holes at Augusta National, 3 under. He finished at minus 7. Tied for third were Tommy Fleetwood, Max Homa, and Colin Morikawa at minus 4. Cameron Smith and Bryson DeChambeau, 2 guys off of the LIV Tour, at minus 2, tied for 6. Xander Schauffele finished at 8th at minus 1. Will Zalatoris and Tyrrell Hatton finished tied for 9th at even par. Both Zalatoris and Hatton shooting a round of 69 over their final 18 holes. Scottie Scheffler back in the winner's circle at Augusta National, and some are saying he might win the Grand Slam this year in its own calendar year. He's got 2 major wins, both of them green jackets. Coming up next will be the PGA Championship at Valhalla. Coming up on this edition of From the Short Grass, part 2 of my sit-down with Mr. Peter Dawson, the former secretary and CEO of the RNA from St. Andrews, Scotland. I sat down with him at the Old Course Hotel in the boardroom just off the 17th hole, overlooking the West Sands Beach and the North Sea. I hope you enjoyed part 1 of my sit-down with him. If you haven't heard it, you can go to our podcast platforms. You can find it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. It's now available on YouTube as well, From the Short Grass. All you have to do is put that in the search bar and it'll take you right to it. You are going to love part 2 of my sit-down with Peter Dawson. That's coming up after the break. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group, one of our great sponsors of From the Short Grass, Matthew Allen and Blair Allen, they know how to manage hotel properties. When you need an overnight place to stay, make sure it's a Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group property. You'll be glad you did. How do you do that? Find them on the web, bphotels.com. We're back with part 2 of my interview with Peter Dawson after this. Stay with us.
Strength is measured not by the number of accounts. Strength is placing value on relationships. It's having the vision and the guts to invest in growth. It's the commitment to responsibly manage your money. At Stevens, we believe that our strengths build success, not only for us, but for our clients. Stevens, member NYSE, SIPC.
Heading to El Dorado to check out some live music or to play Mystic Creek? Stay at the Haywood, the only boutique hotel in the middle of downtown and the Murphy Arts District. If you are spending a weekend in Hot Springs, make plans now at the Marriott Courtyard close to Lake Hamilton and Oaklawn. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group manages both of these fine properties, and you will rest easy knowing that your every need is taken care of. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels on the web at bphotels.com.
Welcome back to this edition of From the Shortgrass. 3 weeks ago, I traveled to Scotland with my wife, Amy, and had the opportunity to sit down with Mr. Peter Dawson, the former secretary and CEO of the Royal and Ancient. The R&A and the USGA are the two governing bodies of the game of golf, and Mr. Dawson was the secretary and CEO of the R&A for over 15 years. He had a great office view overlooking the old course and the West Sands Beach in St. Andrews, Scotland, and I got to sit down with him at the Old Course Hotel inside of their boardroom for this interview. I hope you enjoyed part one. I think you're going to love part two. On the tee, Peter Dawson.
Because of your services, the late Queen made you commander of the most excellent order of the British Empire. What was your reaction to hearing that news for the first time?
Well, obviously honored. One doesn't like to dwell on these things. And it's great that someone is recognized in golf, and several have, of course, for the contribution. It's good to see that golf is recognized. But you don't get an award like that for what you've done yourself. It's the team behind you.
But you're the leader of that team.
Yeah, but it's great to have. I don't write it down after my name everywhere I go, but it's good to have it there, but good for the game of golf to have it in light still.
How did golf change from the time you became secretary of the R&A to when you retired in 2015?
Yeah, not much, I don't think. It became more international. As I said, through the Olympics, more countries became involved, and generally there was growth in the game. It suffered a bit in the major markets for a while, but the international markets were compensating for that. And there were more and more money came into the game, perhaps through Tiger as much as anything, more TV money and so on. So it grew commercially. But it was still the same game in 2015 as it was in 1999 when I started. And more golf courses were being built. It was expanding. But the fundamentals of golf remained the same, sportsmanship, respect, adherence to the rules. Those things survived, and long may they do so.
A lot of people that I talk to, I ask them about, is golf a way for you to get away from everything? Basically, the workplace, everyday life. There's a saying in the States that a bad day on the golf course beats a good day in the office. would you agree with that sentiment?
Pretty much, yeah, I would. Obviously, there's some great days in the office which are memorable, but I find playing golf, the only thing I can do is think about my golf. My mind can't wander onto other stuff, and nowhere else does that happen. So, it's a complete switch off from the rest of life, I find.
Is the game of golf in a good state right now? Is it in a good place?
Well, we're at a time when around the world, recreational golf is going from strength to strength. Post-COVID, it's really taken off, and club memberships are high. More and more people are playing. Manufacturers are enjoying huge demand for their products. Terrific. Obviously, what's been happening in men's professional golf has put golf in what's not a good place, quite a bad place, actually, at the moment, in that sense. None of us expect golf to be torn apart by wranglings like we've seen and so on. And the sooner that is resolved, the better. Because I think the golfing public are getting a little fed up with it. I know I am.
Yeah.
And let's hope that's resolved soon with the talks that we know are going on. But, you know, here in St Andrews, you look out the window, you look at the hotel bookings and everything, and boy, this summer's going to be busy again. There's going to be lots of golfers here. And the recreational game is in good shape. More and more women are playing. More and more kids are playing. That's wonderful. But we need to be careful at the top end that we don't spoil the ship, really.
You spoke a little bit about COVID. Do you think that time, and I know when everything was shut down, but then when they started releasing the demands of staying inside, some people were able to get out. And one of those places that you could go outside and have recreation was a golf course.
Yes, it was. And I remember here in St. Andrews, the rules were such that you couldn't travel more than 5 miles for recreation. And you couldn't play golf in more than a two ball. So locals here in St. Andrews had the old course in two balls. And it was fantastic. You'd get around in 2 3/4 hours and all the rest of it. It was
all to yourself.
Some of the best golfing days ever. But around the world, I think the release of being housebound or whatever bound onto some form of recreation like golf, I caused a lot of people to remember, you know, just how good it was. And I think that has stuck there. And it's up to the national associations around the world to make sure that they continue to take advantage of that growth.
Where do you see the game of golf heading in the near future?
Well, other than what we just touched on that needs to be resolved in men's professional golf, I see no reason why the game won't continue to prosper. The R&A continues to work. They say they want to make sure golf's in a good place 50 years from now. I don't know if 50 is the right number or not, but in the future. You see, the great strength of golf is the game itself. It is a great game, mm-hmm. and you can play it against people of different abilities, different backgrounds all the time. You're out there for 3 or 4 hours, whatever, with them, get to know people. It's just a marvelous recreation, and I think its intrinsic nature is the biggest thing that will secure its future. But it needs to be properly managed, of course.
Did the view from your office in the R&A clubhouse ever get old?
No. When a few problems might have arisen, then you think, what on earth are we going to do with that? You might just take a minute or two to walk out the office door onto the balcony and take a look around and walk back into the office and give you a different perspective on things. The game has its own momentum. And what we're doing is just renting space while we try and move it along in the right direction.
Obviously, you presided over several Open Championships. What's the build-up like for that for you when you were secretary?
Well, when I was secretary, the championship department at the R&A in my time is very accomplished. They're doing more events than ever now, but in my time, they're full of experienced people who were very good at building the infrastructure of the championship. And most of my own work concentrated on the golf course itself and the players and the qualification and all that kind of thing. So I spent a lot of time at the open venues with the greenkeepers and the club management and members, just making sure we had their support, making sure that we did do quite a few architectural changes to golf courses as we went along. We kept them fresh and as challenging as we could, because it's still a scholarship examination. You know, we're trying to identify the best golfer, and we have to give them a good test. And I think we managed to do that, even though some of these links courses had been used for centuries or certainly decades. And I think they've all stood the test of time.
The rotation of those championship venues, places that people want to go play after the event is held there.
Yes.
And those places see an influx years after.
They do. It's commercially good for the venues, that's for sure. But the R&A pays its way. You know, it doesn't rely on the venues to pay for the open. The R&A does that. But the venues get that benefit for years to come. Right?
The best women in the world will be here this summer.
Yes.
The old course for the Women's Open Championship.
They will.
Will you be here watching?
Oh, yes. Goodness me, yes. I remember the first time I saw the Women's Open here. I was on my balcony when Michelle Wee was teeing off the first tee. Now, you would think, wouldn't you, old course at St. Andrews, first time she'd been in a competitive round, that there might be a few nerves on the first tee. You know what she did? She dropped the ball on the deck and hit driver and faded it back off the Swilcan bridge to the perfect position on the fairway. Wow. And I thought, wow. And goodness me, that was quite something.
Is that the best first tee shot you've ever seen?
Well, it was certainly the most impressive and memorable. We had Michelle Wee with us when we went to Copenhagen to do the IOC presentation, and she was remarkably good. You know, she was much younger then, of course, and we had a consultant helping us, and each of these players we had with us, we had four of them, Padraig Harrington, Mateo Manacero, and who else was it? Come to her name in a minute. I know her so well. And Michelle. And Michelle was given a piece of paper. This is what we'd like you to say, Michelle. And she looked at it, put it down, and she was word perfect. Extraordinary. Absolutely extraordinary. And she was a great, great asset. Suzanne Pettersson was the other one.
Oh, yes. I've been told that the first tee shot is the best laxative in golf on the old course.
It's certainly a tense one for a lot of people. You know, you see people arrive there first time in tears on the first tee. Sometimes they're so overcome by being here, and a lot of people watching. You know, casual general public walking past,
especially your putts on 18.
Oh yeah,
when you finish.
Yeah. And it's probably the widest fairway in Christendom, but the number of people who managed to miss it is quite extraordinary.
You're right. I will tell you this story. So when I was here last summer, when I first met you, I was here with Coach Joe Foley of the Little Rock basketball women's team. And when we finished on 18, he walked off the green, Mr. Dawson. Trey said, it's the best day I've ever had on a golf course.
Wow. And so many people say that. Yeah. Of course, the Links Trust that administer all the golf courses here in St. Andrews do a fantastic job. And the caddies are all part of the experience as well for many. And they know how to give people a good time.
If you're a golfer, though, it's an experience. You have to try and come and experience yourself.
Yes, absolutely. It's a must-do. And, of course, you know, to make a trip of it, there are so many other great courses in the area. Both out here on the Links and King's Barnes and Dumbarney now and so on, that it's, a week in this part of the world is a good thing.
Is there anything in your golf administration career that you would want to do different as you look back?
Oh, boy. I'm sure there is. Yeah, you know, it is 8 or 9 years since I retired now, and you tend to remember the good stuff and not the bad. I can't think of anything that really sticks out at me. Obviously, one or two people issues and so on. But no, I think the R&A team managed to keep the game moving forward, which was the main thing. The R&A's greatest asset is its reputation, I think. And the main role of the secretary or chief executive is to maintain or enhance that reputation. And you do that not by doing what's good for the R&A necessarily, but what's good for golf. And most of the time, they're the same thing, but some of the times, maybe they're not. And that's when difficult decisions come along, but you have to take them in the best interest of the game. That's what we're there for.
If there's one rule in the game of golf that you would like to see changed, what would it be?
Oh, I'd like to go back to dropping from shoulder height. I can hardly bend over enough. I feel like an ostrich laying an egg. But no, I think, there's many contentious things, aren't there, out there. But the game was never meant to be fair, you know. It's part of the game is taking the rough with the smooth and having the patience to overcome these difficulties. I know there are people who'd like to get free drops out of divot marks on fairways, but, you know, why would you do that after 600 years of play? You know, all of a sudden, golf courses are in better condition now than they've ever been.
And if most of the time, if it's a sand-filled divot, you're going to be okay.
Yeah, well, if you're good enough to play them, that's right. But it is all part of it, overcoming these difficulties and keeping the head and, carrying on.
Was there ever a trophy ceremony that didn't go according to plan?
Well, there was actually, not of the Open so much, but of the Walker Cup opening ceremony at Royal County Down. And 10 minutes before the ceremony began, I personally checked the flags and the flagpoles and the ropes, and they were all perfect working order. When it came to the American flag having to be raised, the American captain couldn't do it because someone had knotted the bottom of the rope.
Oh, no.
And I thought, oh, this is a disaster. But we got through it. But someone had actually, as it were, vandalized the thing. But the match was played in the best of spirits.
Was there any CCTV that
might No, have... we never did suss out how it had happened. But literally 5 or 10 minutes before the ceremony, I knew that was working perfectly.
Any other crazy things happen in your time that, you know, just up and out of the blue, it's like, whoa, how did that happen?
Oh, gosh, they caught me there. I remember once Sergio Garcia came to me at an Open. He said, why are all the tee pegs on the practice range white? And I said, Sergio, I have to be honest, I don't know the answer to that, but I will find out. And I went over to the practice range and I told them that I'd been asked this question. And they said, oh, we've changed to white because in other years, Sergio used to come along and take all the colored ones away to play with for the season. So I caught him out on that.
What was his response?
He went off laughing.
Have you ever been awestruck by a golfer, being in the presence of a golfer?
Well, I think one of the most nerve-wracking things, and a great honor I did, was to speak at Arnold Palmer's funeral service. Arnold had an aura about him that is well-known and well-deserved, and spending any time with him was a particular thrill. But yes, I've met most of them, met them all, and by and large, golf people are really good, really nice people at all levels. And I miss it now a bit, I must say. But it's great to have had the experience.
You told me earlier before we started recording that your game has gotten worse.
Just in the last few months, I've noticed a deterioration. It may be age related, and I hope that's all it is. But I'm determined to get it back. I've seen some green shoots in the last few days, so I'll keep at it.
But you're putting better.
I'm putting better than I did when I was younger, and I don't know why that is. I wasn't the greatest of putters at one time.
Best golf course you've ever played?
Oh, well, I'm often asked this question, and I don't have an answer because I can't compare an old course at St Andrews with an Augusta National, with a Pine Valley, I can compare it to a Muirfield, but they're so different. And I have half a dozen that I like to play a lot, and I'll stick with those. But I wouldn't like to say whether I like Pine Valley better than Ocean Forest, or, you know, they're all great joys, and they're all different, and that's why they are where they are in the league of golf courses.
Do you still play with persimmon clubs from time to time?
No, I don't. I've still got a few in my garage, and but I look at them from time to time, and I think, how on earth did we ever hit?
I know.
Hit that. But I do remember the first time I came here, back in the 70s, I did hit it onto the last green with a persimmon driver off the tee. I remember it quite clearly.
You drove the green?
I did. I can't do that now with a big
was it downwind?
It must have been. It must have hit the road or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But there it was on the green. That was just after I missed my 3-foot putt on the 17th. Maybe there was some anger in the shot.
Yes, probably. But then did you birdie 18 by driving
the
green?
I did, yeah. I did.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. But that was good. But I can't do that now or get anywhere near it. It's pathetic.
Crazy. It's a crazy game.
It's
at
a crazy
times.
Game, and you remember some stuff, and some stuff you like to forget.
Fantasy foursome, you and three others, living or deceased, who would you like to play a round of golf with?
Well, if it was to be my last round, it wouldn't be with anyone you've ever heard of, because I've played golf in pro-ams and so on with a lot of the big names. But I've enjoyed playing golf with so many people, and I think the last round would be, well, my son would be one of them, I guess.
Okay.
He's a very keen player, doesn't play enough, although I did play with him this last weekend. He was up here. There's just so many nice people in golf, and I could list 50 people I'd love to play with in my last round. I don't have a favorite foursome.
Golf has been a part of your life for a long time.
Yeah, since I was 11 years old, I think.
Wow. The history that you know about, that you can tell others about, I mean, that's a special gift.
Yes, I remember late Mark McCormack saying to me before he sadly died that I should keep a very close diary at the RNA for when I wrote my book. I said, Mark, there will be no book, and there hasn't been, and there won't be. So many things need to be private, and the better for it.
Let's say I just finished first in an Open Championship with a score of 279. During the trophy ceremony, when you were secretary of the RNA, you would say,
ladies and gentlemen, with a score of 279, the winner of the gold medal and the champion golfer of the year is Trey Schapp.
I love it.
You know, sometimes, and it still happens very occasionally, if I'm in town here in St. Andrews, someone might come up to me in the street with a young child and say, Mr. Dawson, great to meet you. Would you do it for little Johnny? And I pretend not to understand, but eventually I do it, and the father's got the phone out videoing this, and I say, ladies and gentlemen, with a score of 273, the winner of the gold medal and the champion golfer of the year is little Johnny, and they go off delighted by this. This is fantastic. And I've never said no. I always do it when they do ask, and it's one of the great fun parts of the role or the X role. It's terrific. I remember, too, just after I retired, guy came up to me in the street and he said, gosh, well, this is a real thrill to meet you. You can be really proud of everything you've done for the game. It's just fantastic. Well, very well done indeed. And as he walked away, he turned back and he said, real pleasure to meet you, Sir Michael. He thought I was Michael Benauer. And that is just the way it should be. The greatest compliment I could ever have.
Mr. Dawson, thank you so much.
Thank you. And please, it's Peter.
Peter? Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Same here. Thanks for your time.
Heading to El Dorado to check out some live music or to play Mystic Creek? Stay at the Haywood, the only boutique hotel in the middle of downtown and the Murphy Arts District. If you are spending a weekend in Hot Springs, make plans now at the Marriott Courtyard close to Lake Hamilton and Oaklawn. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group manages both of these fine properties, and you will rest easy knowing that your every need is taken care of. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels on the web at bphotels.com.
I hope you enjoyed both of these episodes of From the Shortgrass, where I had the chance to sit down with Mr. Peter Dawson. I can't thank him enough for the invitation to go to St. Andrews, sit down with him at the Old Course Hotel, and talk golf. What a treat that was, and I hope you really enjoyed it. One quick story that I was not recording on when he told me it was right after we finished the interview is if you go back to the 2005 Masters when Tiger Woods chipped in for birdie on the 16th hole, and Vern Lundquist had the most famous words of, in your life have you ever seen anything like that? Tiger's ball sitting on the lip of the hole before dropping in. Everybody is going crazy, except for one person. You see, Mr. Dawson was the rules official, and he was assigned to that hole and actually had to move his chair for Tiger to hit that shot. There's a photograph of Tiger and Stevie celebrating, and in the background you see Mr. Dawson just standing stoically. Although I've looked at the video and he did clap momentarily after, but he told me that Tiger Woods sent him a handwritten note with that photo and said, gee, couldn't you show a little emotion out there at some point? He did. What a class act Peter Dawson is, and what a story, and what stories he has in his time and his involvement with the game of golf. What a treasure, and we are so thankful that he served as secretary and CEO of the RNA for as long as he did. That's it for this edition of From the Shortgrass. I hope to see you sometime soon. Remember, when you find your ball mark on the green, fix it and a couple of more, and I will see you soon from the Shortgrass.
You've been listening to From the Shortgrass, a weekly podcast dedicated to the game of golf. This has been a presentation of the Buzz Radio Network.